What's up, everybody? This is the MMA Talk Show, and we're back this week with a good one for you guys. We have later on for you the big homie James Clark, the multiple time flyweight champion in Canada, outside of Canada. The guy's winning belt, defending belts. He's doing everything. He's an amazing fighter and an amazing interview too. And we got him just later on in a few minutes. But as we always do, we're going to begin the podcast speaking about some local action because it is now official. The MMA is back in the province of Quebec. Samurai MMA is going to take place on November 19. It is going to be an amazing event. They just released the card. The tickets are on sale as at Ticketmaster. I urge you to purchase them. It's going to be in Montreal at L'Olympia in the main event. It's a title fight at 155. Mikael Dufour, who's fresh off his win on the CFFC event, CFFC 100 event. He's now 8-3, 8-1 in his 9 last fights. Then he's fighting Cal Perepelec, fresh off his U.S. UFC run, first time back since the UFC, one of the better fighters in Canada for years now. So probably two of the most high-profile lightweight fighters in the country. They're going to face each other off in the title fight. And in the co-main event of the evening, it's a champion versus champion fight. Alex Morgan, Maged Amo. Alex Morgan has been the TKO champion, the hybrid champion. He's basically won every belt in every promotion he's fought for professionally now. And he's going to face off against Maged Amo, who just won the unified belt against Neil Anderson in one of the best fights of the year. A great comeback win and a great upset win for him. He's going to face off against Alex Morgan, biggest fight of his career by far. Morgan has been the number one 145er in the country for years now. He's the guy you need to beat if you want to move up to the next level. So Amo and Alex Morgan is going to be an amazing fight. And then on the undercard, Frédéric Duprat is back against Pat Connors. Pat Connors, good experienced fighter. I can't wait to see him. Then one of the better fights on the event, Tommy Morrison making his pro debut against Pierre Thivierge. This is a rematch from the amateur, an amateur title fight that they had. Morrison won, but it was a good back and forth fight. I can't wait to see that rematch. Thivierge is going to be super pumped up to avenge that loss and to really, because you know, amateur fights, the results are important for sure, but you're looking more into the process than the result. Like, you can lose some amateur fights, that doesn't mean you're going to be a bad pro. You just want to see some improvement, some new things, some new wrinkles in your game. So that's going to be a good one for Pierre Thivierge to try to prove that the Morrison loss on the amateur scene was not what it's going to be like in the future. And same thing for Tommy Morrison, who've been waiting for on the professional scene for a while. Now he's finally going to make his pro debut, so that's a hugely anticipated fight. Then Mehdi Zeidvan, Guillaume Forcier. Yeah, Mehdi is a wrestler, is an amazing wrestler. He's just came to try to train MMA. He's gonna make his pro debut. Like I said, amazing wrestler, next level wrestler. Basically, we don't see his level of wrestling quite often here. And he's facing off against tough Guillaume Forcier, who's from Quebec City and who has been fighting for a while. He was inactive for a while, but the guy has experience as a pro. He's still always in the gym teaching jiu-jitsu, teaching stuff. So he's not taking any, he was not lacking during his inactivity period. That's what I'm trying to say. And he's back as a pro, ready to face off against Mehdi. It's going to be an amazing one. Then Yannis Azar, another guy we've been waiting for years to see his pro debut, was supposed to fight on the last TKO card in 2019. We had a full pandemic since, and Azar has never fought pro yet. Multiple time amateur champion for Fight Quest, for MFL, for all these promotions. He's facing off against Noah Crosswell, a really good fighter, good striker. Is going to be probably a striking contest between these two. Very exciting fight. Can't wait to see it. Then Matthew Rusniak, Alan Girard. It's going to be a good one too. Rusniak, amazing grappler. Girard probably want to keep this fight standing. I know they're both able to do everything, but kind of a striker versus grappler dynamic here. And finally, we got Maxime Soucy against a guy that has not yet been announced because they didn't receive the contract yet and all that stuff. But Maxime Soucy, to look out for, a fight is going to be announced for him in the near future. So just go to ticketmaster.ca. get your tickets or speak to your fighter, your local fighter. If you're from the Montreal area, lots of people living near Montreal on this card. If you're from Quebec, there's Guillaume Fortier who's going to be able to sell you tickets. So wherever you are in Quebec, ticketmaster.ca, or speak to your fighter and buy tickets from them. You shall not miss this event, the return of pro MMA in Quebec. And last night was the return of MMA in another part of Canada, and it was Eastern Canada with Fight League Atlantic 2. Man, they saved the night, to be quite honest, because UFC sucked fucking balls. I wanted to die before listening to that shit, and the main event was like even worse than we thought it was going to be. One of the worst fights I've seen in years. And the Bellator was okay until the two final fights. There was some good action, and not telling you otherwise, but man, Fight League Atlantic, they delivered. Unfortunately for them, they didn't have any pro fights on the card. It was like, what a nightmare to book this event, man. Basically, they were supposed to go in Nova Scotia. They had paid for everything. Everything was set, the date, the event, the arena, everything. They had paid for their stuff. And last minute, oh shit, a new COVID restriction changes, bullshit and stuff. You can't be here. And you had to move the old damn event from Nova Scotia to New Brunswick. And like, super short notice. So Derek, man, this fucking guy just pulled it off, and I'm so happy for him, because like, he's one of the best guys I've met in this business, point blank. This guy is amazing. Derek Clark is amazing, and I'm so happy that he was able to present this show and to present a good show, even though not even pro fights. I don't usually cover amateur fights, to be quite honest. I don't have time for this, but I'll always have time for Fight League Atlantic. I'll always have time for my main man, Derek. And man, these fights were amazing, to be honest. Started the night off with David Chapman. Guy came in, fought a little, submitted his opponent, Andrew Van Tessel, with an armbar in 2 minutes about. And like, I know it's 3 minute rounds. There was less than a minute left. So 2 minutes something. Good performance, of course. Submission. And then Chris Vickers, Fabian Ickes. Ickes, how do you say that? I don't know. I don't want to butcher your name, but Fabian, heavyweight, same thing. Good back and forth contest going into the third round. Locks up the rear naked choke, gets the win for Fabian. Good shit for him. Then the middleweights, and another first round armbar by Brett Dwyer on Gordon Jewers. Good fight. And then Alex Thompson comes in, and not an armbar this time, but an Americana in the second round, that time against Anthony Sloan. That was a great performance. I can't wait to see Alex Thompson back in the cage. And then we had to stop with the finishes for just one fight, because the ladies came in, and Maria Clinton was hockey fighting that girl, and Abby Wainwright was super tough, and was trying to clinch up and maybe bring the fight to the ground, where she thought she would have a bigger advantage. And Mariah Clinton was able to basically shrug it off and be able to get the rounds, even though it was a really back and forth contest all the way through. Mariah Clinton was able to stay in front of her opponent by just a little, and was able to get all three rounds, was able to get the decision win. It's the right score. Was a great back and forth fight. I think both ladies, for their first fight, they need to be really proud of themselves. And then Matt Arnish lands a super good takedown. Super impressed. He's playing on top. Then gets swept. And I'm like, oh man, he kind of got swept easily here. But was it all a ploy? I think it must have been, because he got swept. And like, basically from the sweep armbar the guy. Like, it wasn't like instantaneous, but almost. He got swept, and as soon as his back touched the ground, he was already angling up for his armbar, and he locked in his armbar on Robbie Robles and was able to finish him in a minute 30. That wasn't a long fight, and Matt Arnish, clearly a good grappler. That's a good first fight for him, and I think that's a guy we need to look at. I heard his name here and then, never saw him fight. I just saw him fight there, and he was really good. Then Matt McDonald given hopes to all gingers all over the world as he defeated Josh LeBlanc by decision. Another decision, but another good back and forth contest. LeBlanc was able to steal around here and there on one of the judges' scorecard. I feel like McDonald basically was able to dominate with his black belt level grappling. Josh LeBlanc was one of the guys that had already fought as an amateur on the card, and McDonald was able to come in his debut and just defeat him with his superior grappling. So that's a really good performance. And then we had Rob Logan, Thomas Johnson. That was a good fight. That was a really good fight. It wasn't like, you know, when you're looking at amateur, you're not looking for a super composed guy or nothing like that. And that was exactly not it. They weren't composed at all. Thomas Johnson started the fight absolutely wild, and he was able to earth Rob Logan at multiple times. And I kind of found it funny how Logan was reacting, because like, he looked like he was hurt at lots of times, but I don't really think he was, to be quite honest. It's just the way that he was covering up and reacting to the punches. He really looked like he was in trouble, and I really felt like Johnson sensed that he was in trouble, and that's why he really put it all into him. And Logan, like, after the first time, I was like, oh man, he's in trouble, he's gonna get finished. And after 3-4 times, I was just, oh, maybe that's just how he shelves up and he blocks the punches and he defends the action of his opponent, even though it looks weird. It looks like he's just covering up and not able to deal with that. Yes, he's covering up, but clearly he's able to deal with that, because he's able to answer back and he's able to, like, not really get hurt. But I mean, maybe he got hurt once or twice in that fight, because Johnson was really coming at him like crazy, and like, who wouldn't get hurt by that huge fucking guy trying to knock your head off? But Rob Logan was able to weather the storm and was able to take over that fight. And in the third round, he was able to put Johnson in a bad position and unload on him. The referee put a stop to the fight. Big win for Rob Logan, who finally gets an amateur win. He was 0-1. Now he's 1-1. And that was a good performance for him. Looking forward to the future for the main man, Rob Logan. And then we had the multiple-time submission Kumite champion, Drake Farrell, against Mathieu Tarantini. And that's the fight that, if you're not looking at it well, you may think Tarantini won, because he pretty much spent the whole time on top. Was landing the takedowns, was on top of his opponent. But man, once he was there, it was tough for him, because he was in the guard of Drake Farrell, and Drake pretty much is super dangerous from there. Was looking for submissions from there. Was throwing punches. Was throwing offense from them. Was really able to, like, when he was being put in that position, he was really able to negate the offense of Tarantini. So that's why we've got two guys giving him all three rounds, even though he clearly spent like all the fight on his back. But I guess that's how you do it when you're a super good grappler who's willing to just be in any position on the ground, because he's confident he's going to win anywhere he is. And that's absolutely what Drake Farrell did. And he won, and it was a good contest. So I'm really happy about that one. As a grappling nerd, I had my eye on that one for sure. And then the main event was for the amateur heavyweight title. Hank Anderson, Jordan Noseworthy. And Jordan Noseworthy, man, absolutely didn't mess around with Hank. Took him down, brutalized him, and then was able to lock in the submission. Was it a submission or a TKO? I don't really remember. He finished him in the first round. Basically, he finished him in the first round. That's what happened. I felt like maybe he tapped him out, but I don't quite remember, man. There were lots of fights on that card, and at that moment, the main event was the time that the action was kind of eating up in Bellator in the UFC. So I had to look at multiple screens at the time. So I don't quite remember the finish, to be honest. It's tough. It's a tough job to be me, to look at 3, 4, 5, 6 things at the same time. So I don't quite remember the finish, but I remember Noseworthy landing a good takedown, being super dominant in that fight, and got his hand raised. Can't wait to see what's up for him. Will he defend his belt? Will he move up to the pros, man? He's got 3, 4 amateur fights, 5 amateur fights, 6 amateur fights. Yeah, maybe it's time. Not many pros here at heavyweight, and I think that this guy could be good even at light heavyweight too. I don't know if he's that big. I wasn't there at the weigh, and I just felt like maybe he was on the slimmer side of things, and he could go down there. But I don't know. I'm not gonna tell him to do or not. I don't know. I don't even know how much he weighs. So let's say it like that. But amazing night. Big shout out Fight League Atlantic. They had all the sticks put in their wheels. Like, if people did everything for them not to present this event, and they fucking did it, and it was fucking great. So big shout outs to Derek and all his crew. And man, I can't wait to just go there and watch an event. I heard Chris Kaladis was probably fighting in the next Fight League Atlantic event. So I'm really looking forward to go there. I know that the shit didn't quite work out this time. I had some stuff at home, and I know back there was some new changes and restrictions and all that COVID stuff. So it was complicated for me to be there that time. But I can't wait to go down either to New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and just watch some fucking fights with these guys, because Derek, like I said, probably one of the best guys I've met in this business. So shout out to them. And before we move on to the James Clark interview, I want to touch briefly on the other Canadian performances. Lupi Godin, that girl's fucking crazy, man. She was like, I just fought, I just won, so I might just do it again this weekend. Why not? Luana Carolina, how tall are you? 5'6", 5'7", how many reach advantage do you have on me? Like 25 feet? Ah, let's fucking do it. Who cares? And she did good. First round, was able to really clinch up, land a good takedown, get into dominant position, clearly win the round. But it was getting tougher and tougher to maintain the pace. And Carolina kind of got used to her clinch game a little bit, so she was maybe more able to see what Lupi was trying to do and negate her takedowns. And when she negated her takedowns, they had to spend more time on the feet, and more that the fight was advancing, more that you could see that it was really tough to deal with Luana Carolina's reach. She had like 25 kilometers of reach over Lupi. Like I said, Lupi's a small fighter. She's not tall. She's bricked up and stuff, but she's a small fighter. She's really a strawweight. Like, really, really a strawweight. And like, when you were looking at that fight, a little like the Jessica Penne fight, you could see that, like, the better fighter probably was Lupi in that fight. But the difference in size, the difference in reach, it was just, once it got on the feet at range, it was really tough for Lupi to get in there without getting it. The reach difference was just really significant in that fight, and in the end, that's what gave the decision to Luana Carolina. She was able to win the two last rounds on most of the judges' scorecard, all three judges' scorecard, in fact, to get the win. Maybe I'm a little biased. I felt like Lupi did better than what the judge felt like she did in the second round. I felt like the second round really could go either way, but I'm not going to stand on my high horse and say, oh, that was a bullshit decision, because we've seen bullshit decision on that specific card, and that wasn't it. To be honest, that was an okay decision. Then, Bellator, Lance Gibson Jr., it made me scared. I was like, man, don't get taken down and lose that fight, Lance. Please, you're better than this guy. I don't know what you're doing. Kind of took the first round off. I won't say off because he did stuff, but like, wasn't that worried. Let's say like that. Like, Lance Gibson was getting taken down, was getting worked on the ground, but was super happy to just close his guard and shoot for submissions and do stuff that is not getting up to your feet and trying to get the fight into the stage that you know that you're going to win it. So I was like, I was kind of scared. I was like, hey, man, you're kind of playing with fire here, mate. But in the second round, Lance decided that the bullshit was over, and he just wrecked him. He just wrecked him. Decided to keep the fight standing and was able to land some good kicks, land some good punch, land some good offense in general. And like, I think one of the first moments that the fight got back in close range, he was able to secure a kind of crucifix, even if they weren't down, and he was able to land some major elbows, major shots to his opponent. And you saw that as soon as Lance was in that position and was starting to land some blows, the referee was like, holy shit, I need to get closer because it's not going to last for much longer. And he was able to get the TKO win in the second round and pretty much like confirm that there wasn't, like, he didn't need to do anything different in the first round, basically. If he wanted to just try and throw some missions on his back and do all that stuff, he could, because he was able to finish that fight as soon as he needed to. And that's what you want to see. This guy's 5-0, one of the better prospects, coached by Lance Izzad, of course, and by Julia Budd. They're a good gym, very good gym in Western Canada. And Lance is undefeated. They're going to try and start to match him up against better guys at Bellator. And I think that the future is really exciting for that guy. Can't wait to see what's in the works for him. And you've got a fan. You've got a fan here. My man Junior is pretty good. So Randy Field, my girl, I'm happy and sad, let's say like that, because I feel like she did good. She did what she could against a top, top, top level prospect, an amazing fighter in Sumiko Inaba. And Randy really came here to fight. I feel like the first minutes of that fight were really back and forth, were really close, to be quite honest. And I was like, man, she's doing way better than I thought she would. And then Sumiko was able to slowly take over from there, get the fight to the ground, dominate there, bust Randy open a little bit and work her. And finally, she was able to get the submission finish in the second round. But I feel like Randy, after a long absence in the cage, she did really good. She was a heavy underdog in that fight, and she did way better than the odds suggested. She fought her ass off. She did everything she could, so we got to be proud of her for this. It was a good performance and a return. And man, maybe I hope she doesn't get matched up with another top level prospect like that, because Sumiko Inaba is really, really, really good, to be quite honest. So that was a tough one for Randy. She did the best that she could, and I'm super proud of her work in that fight. So once again, maybe not as much wins as last week. We went 1-2 in Bellator in the UFC as Canadians, but Loopy did great. Randy did great. Lance did absolutely amazing. Fight League Atlantic was fire. And now it's time to speak to my main man, the big homie, James Clark. So enjoy the podcast this week, guys. Hey, what's up, everybody? The champ is here. James Clark, what's up?
How's it going, man?
I'm doing good.
Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you back, man. First time we spoke, it was my old way of recording stuff. And at the last minute, we lost the video. I can assure you this time we're going to see you in full force. So here he is, James Clark, on a huge winning streak. How are you feeling, man?
Not too bad, man. Quicker than usual type of fight. So no injuries. I was back training in the gym yesterday.
Damn, yeah, that was a quick finish in the first round. I got to see the fight on YouTube. You pretty much whipped him from start to finish.
Yeah, a little bit of short adversity at the start, obviously. I definitely always have room to improve, but the outcome was pretty much what I expected. Got the job done, and they never really pay you the longer you stay in there, so it's always nice to have another first round sub on my record.
Yeah, for sure. And the fight before you, when you won the belt, it was a 5-round decision fight, but a good performance too. And you fought like a really experienced guy. That guy, I think, had like 50 fights, something like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just want to know, how was it, and what did you get from that fight? Because I feel that's early in your career, that's a fight that can give you a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I was just like 4-3 going into that fight. Like, so one more loss and I'm back to a 500 fighter, long way from where I see myself being. So a lot of pressure, not fighting in a year and a half, and then just stepping in there with a guy like that. But I know there's a lot of good fighters in the States and stuff, but like there's 400 of them, I think, ranked at flyweight opposed to our 20. And you look in the top five in Canada. I don't need to mention any names. I've fought most of them, but it's stacked, right? And I think they underestimate a lot of us Canadians and stuff. Maybe what Canadians were 10 years ago, but I watched women's MMA even come into MMA basically. So I've been around too. I'm only 27, but I mean, this sport's definitely come a long way.
Yeah, and you touched on it a little bit. Like, you fought some really, really good opposition in your first fight in your career, and then you had the chance to come back for BTC. Still fight good guys, but guys of your experience, like that are making their pro debut or same number of fights. And then you had the chance to re-up your record from 1-3 to 3-3, 4-3, and now you're a 6-3. You've got double the wins of your losses. So I want to know, how does it feel? Because we always saw the potential in you, and it was like unusual for us to see James Clark with a bad record early in his career, but it seems like things have kind of evened out now. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, Joe Rogan always has that one meme. I share it every time I see it. Basically, the only thing better than a success story is someone who fucked it up and got her back together. So I think I don't feel obligated to sell myself. Like, I'm just being me. And if people want to, like, if they want to give me the mic, it could be some of my best work. Sometimes I can go a little much on it. But I got no problem doing all my talking in the ring. It's nice to have guys like yourself that run pretty popular social media. A lot of the top fighters follow you. So just thanks for having me. And obviously, it gives me a chance to show people what I'm all about. Like Dana and them, like they're always tripping like flyweights and stuff. Like I just feel like they don't do enough work with like showing some of the guys' characters, because little people are people too, man. Like I want to get paid in this shit eventually. They say do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life, right? So that's the goal. I make good money with my roofing company. I've only been in business for like 3 years, but I mean, enough I could live happily on. But if I don't give this MMA shit 100%, then that would never make me happy.
No, for sure. And I don't know if you feel the same, but I feel like all the talk about the flyweights and all, it's not an interesting division. And I think it's dead right now, to be honest. With Moreno, with Figueiredo, with all these guys, Alexandre Pantoja, like it's pretty much the most exciting division with 135, I feel, right now in MMA. And like I feel like people on Twitter, like at the MMA community, they're kind of coming around to it because of guys like Moreno. He's so lovable, and guys like Figueiredo, like so explosive. And so I feel like right now it's pretty much the peak for the flyweight division. Because yes, there was Mighty Mouse. He was amazing. Probably one of the best fighter, if not the best fighter we've ever seen. But like it's almost like Shevchenko right now with the women's flyweight. It's like she's so dominant that you just don't see anything in the division that could touch her, and it becomes uninteresting. But right now with flyweights, you got some top guys that are really good, and you feel like Figueiredo could beat Moreno in the rematch. Pantoja could come around and like beat one of those guys on a good night, and you never know what could happen. And I feel like it's pretty much peak time for flyweight right now in MMA in general.
Yeah, I agree. Like like the belt getting tossed around like it is right now, like that creates drama, right? Like Moreno's got two losses against Buddy there that you mentioned as well, and like Pantoja, and like it just creates that drama, right? Like I remember it was like Alex Morgan, TJ Laramie, and Charles Jourdain. Like they created like a bit of drama themselves, because like you couldn't say one guy was better than the other guy, because they all kind of have wins over each other, right? Like, styles make matchups, and it's like, I feel like TJ Laramie could have probably out-wrestled Alex Morgan, but, like, he wanted to, like, get it back both times and show that he could strike, and then, like, I don't know, like, hey, you can say whatever you want until you get in there, right? But, like, I feel like that creates that drama. By the way, I didn't know if we were actually doing the video, so I wore this. I actually hate TKO.
Listen, not too much people really like the homie Stefan Patry, to be honest.
I hear you, man. Well, like, I'm happy. I don't ever blame my losses on anybody else. Like, those are my losses. I'll brag about 1-3 every day until I turn blue in the face, because, like, I'm doing it now and people believe it again, right? Like, show me the people that believed in me at 1-3, right? Like, people can blame whatever they want on other people, but, like, you gotta take responsibility for your own actions. And, like, I was 13-2 as an amateur, but, like, that 1-3, I did that to myself. Like, not saying that I could have beat any of those three guys, but, like, I definitely would have gave myself a better chance had I been doing some of the things I'm doing now. So, but good judgment comes from bad judgment. I'm happy I met Stefan Patry. I'm glad he's out of business. at the same sense, I don't regret anything.
No, for sure. But talk about these changes. Like, what's different now? Because you're 5 in a row and nobody can tell you shit. So what have you changed from that time?
Well, when I fought Mancini was, like, my last true 125 loss, technically. Like, I had that Singapore controversial loss, but, like, no excuse. Like, those didn't count as my pro fights, even though I was kept fighting pro fighters in that tournament. Like, in 2019, I had 7 fights, technically. So, like, it just, like, I can be one of the most active guys, like, if I'm given the platform, right? So, like, now I got B2 fight. They have a promotion every weekend. So it just gives me that, like, hey, you want to fight? Whenever you want to fight type deal. Like, they just, like, they're starting to let me call the shots. Like, right before I fought that Donnie kid, they seen that I had 53 pay-per-view buys. I was, like, a couple off from beating Terry and for, like, most ever. And, like, the promoter tells me, he's like, take the belt back to Canada or whatever. Like, he was clearly rooting for me, but at the same sense, it's like, you know, I had a bit of adversity in the fight too. Like, it's not like I was fighting dweebs, but, like, he even said to me, like, at least he was real enough to say, like, I already know, because Stefan Patry taught me this, that promoters don't give a fuck about you. It depends what you bring to the table, right? So him just trying to sign me to 5 fight deal at the start, these guys, they don't sign me at all. If I want to fight for them, they, like, it's 1 fight contracts, even being their champ. So, like, it's a give take type of relationship, right? Whereas Patry, it was all just like give. Now I got you for 2 years, and yeah, but yeah, I already knew promoters don't care about you unless you're bringing something to the table, and it just feels good to have a promotion that wants to build me up. Like, if BTC was willing to build me up, I'm not asking for dweebs. I want to fight guys in my level. But, you know, if they're just offering me Tony Laramie every fight, like, Tony, I fought Tony for free, I'd fight him again, too, in a heartbeat. But, I mean, I feel like we're both in the careers now, a point in our career. I'm not no Tito, like, bitching out like Chuck Liddell. But, like, if UFC comes to Toronto, let's fucking go, Tony. We're the best. But at the same sense, like, I got everything I need from this promotion, and I plan on being the most active flyweight in Canada outside of Canada this year. So,
and I've seen there was some back and forth with that opponent, but I believe there was some back and forth with, like, other mainstays of that promotion, let's say, like that. So what's next for you? Who do you want to fight for B2?
B2, they already pretty much got it, and it's this guy named Anthony Cazzano. He's 6-1 as a pro. He's fought guys like Cody Durden in the UFC now. And he's got a couple other big fights. But he's also fought some 0-6 guys. Like, I don't know if he's even going to accept the fight. If he wants my belt, he's going to have to. But at the same sense, he hasn't quite agreed to the fight yet. It's just who B2 wants me to fight. Like I said, I'm their champ. I plan on defending it. I'm pretty much at the point in my career where a real champ doesn't really get to decide who he fights next. It's whoever they want to put in front of me. I mean, the biggest thing about fighting in Canada for me right now is just, like, what's the point? I'm not allowed to have any of my fans, for the most part. Like, they can't have full out And the only time I'm ever going to fight for BTC again is if they throw a show in Oshawa. Like, if they throw a show in my back door, I mean, it's pretty hard to say no. But for the most part, I got a good thing going, and they're keeping me happy. I made the most money I've ever made fighting for promotion, so they're paying me good. They give me pay-per-view buys. They give me a cut. Kind of keeps me trying to build myself as much like that. Everything's just going according to plan finally. So it just feels good to have the right corner, the right people that feed me instead of bring me down, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Would you fight that guy, Jeremy Pender, at 35? I think he's their champ. Would you fight him?
I was going to fight him, but he wanted to come down to 125. He actually called me out like three different times, which I...
Yeah, that's why I was asking.
I accepted all three times. And then he was saying that he was injured and this and that, making excuses. At least he bitched out 6 weeks before the fight. So it gave enough time for another guy. I wouldn't want another guy stepping in short notice and have that excuse. Like, he didn't have a good camp to face. So it was nice that me and Donnie still had a full camp. But he did accept the fight three times, and he got on my social media. He probably made the likes go up a little bit. People love that. Mm-hmm. But at the same sense, he was just, he was all talk. He was a little bit like this guy in the sense that he's got 18 finishes, but he's never got a decision win. He's made it to the decision, unlike this guy that I fought, but still just kind of got that weak. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and he knocked out Terry, so I respect him. But at the same sense, if you ain't ever fought in 125, like, you're a virgin, period. Like, you're not gonna knock me out like that after a weight cut. So plus, I mean, props to Terry. I've rolled Terry. He's definitely real strong and stuff, but like, I mean, to get down to what we're already comfortable at, like, I pretty much got it down to a science as far as the weight cut goes. Like, I'm coming in there 140 by the time I step in the cage every time. So and I just think he just wouldn't perform. But I mean, I gave him the chance. Now, if I ever do give that guy another chance, he pretty much has to go fight somebody else at 125, and then I'd give him a shot. I'm not gonna risk wasting my time with a guy like that. Plus, he's the type of opponent that at 18 and 14, I know how good he is, and he had tough fights, but, I mean, it doesn't really offer me anything. Like, you and a couple real MMA fans would maybe see how good of a win that is, especially beating a guy like Terry. But at the same sense, the UFC ain't fucking looking at guys like that. So, I mean, this Cusano guy is much better matchup as far as getting noticed, and they're pretty much in the same level of opponents.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like sometimes the UFC matchmakers, they just can't, like, watch everything. So if they look at your record and it's, like, 18 and 17 guys and stuff like that, even if the guy's good, like you said, they just don't – if they don't see the fight, they don't know that he's good. So they're saying, oh, this guy is beating jobbers, this guy's beating journeymans, and they're like, not interested. So for sure, yeah, the other guy that you mentioned at 6-1 is – That's a good look. That's a good look on your record. That's the type of wins you want to get to get that shot, for sure.
This guy comes from a really good gym. He comes from Stanford MMA. I'm sure you've seen Jesse Arnett's posts, and I think
my good homie Barrio was there.
Yeah,
he basically lives there now.
Yeah, so. I was just about to mention that. So, like, I swear to God, I didn't know that he was from that gym, which it doesn't matter where the fuck gym you train. Justin Breckman's the man. But at the same sense, it's one of those things that I actually had it in my head. Jesse Arnett made it look pretty cool. So I was like, man, I'd train there. Like, Florida seems like a good spot. Like, maybe because it's still hard to get to Thailand. Thailand's where my heart belongs. Like, Tiger Muay Thai. I had amazing camps there, and I just love the whole Thai lifestyle. I got a bit of an Asian fetish, so it's a good time in Thailand. But anyway, I was looking at this Stanford MMA because, like, I do want to get away for a month before this fight. And, well, I guess I can't go there if this guy, unless this guy doesn't accept it, then I'll go train with him. But who knows? I'm ready for anybody. So they'll give me somebody. If it's not him, they'll give me somebody who deserves to be in there with me.
Yeah, no, you're right that Sanford and South Florida in general, that's a hot spot right now. And Vegas too, like they're the two hot spots because obviously the UFC never leaves Vegas basically except for pay-per-views. So people go there and like it's two states where you're pretty much free to train, which is not the case everywhere, especially not in Canada, especially not in Ontario or Quebec. We're so fucked, man. But like, let's not get into that. But
I partied in Nashville after the fight. Nashville is only like an hour from Kentucky, so
yeah,
kept telling me that's the spot to party in. I don't even like country, to be honest, but I had a really good time.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. And just like seeing the fucking football games and stuff, man. That's
yeah, it was cool, man.
It's crazy, man. You're looking at your TV on Sunday and there's like 80,000 people in the stands and nobody are giving a single fuck about anything except for the games.
Yeah, exactly. They like their football, that's for sure.
Yep. And just talk a little bit about Justin Brockman, because that's like a huge add to your game, a huge guy to just have around you, show you stuff, man. He was a super good MMA fighter, and it feels like it's pretty much translated into a super good coach.
Yeah, yes, man. Definitely just changed my whole life, really. He actually was in my corner for the first time when I fought Dave Henry for the BTC belt, which going into that fight, I had a 500 record. I don't know too many guys who get a title shot main event at 500 record, but I definitely respect BTC. They were good to me. And if it wasn't for COVID and other stuff, like Brockman always tells me, like, you're not the champ till you defend it. So like, yes, I was never the BTC champ because I never defended it, but I'm grateful for all the opportunities. I mean, if it wasn't for, like technically I left Patrie to fight for BTC, and I mean, they believed in me, I feel like, a lot more. They were actually...
That's a different philosophy, huh? These guys are way cooler than the...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'd go down to the girl who owns BTC. She owns a dispensary down there in Alderville and stuff. She like hooked me up half price and stuff. Like they were cool promotion. Like I said, if they fight in Oshawa again, like, I mean, they paid me decent too. I couldn't complain. It's not about the money for me. It's just like the fact that they wouldn't really bring it. Like they were just giving me the one or two options, and I mean, I still would like to fight Gabe Zagman. He's a tough fight. Like, he's pretty much a 500 fighter right now too, but like, I know he's way better than his record. Like, I do owe that guy a fight, basically. I would never act like I was running from it. It's just I went one way and he went the other way. So I mean, the B2 is not looking to build other Canadians up, so it's one of those things that I just got to put whoever they put in front of me and just got to worry about me.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, just to tell you, man, I went to the last BTC event. Like, I had a free weekend and I was just like with one of my homies. I was like, man, fuck it, let's just go. I want to see some fights. I know many fights fell through on that card, but like, it was still a good card. There were some good fights, but man, it was complicated. I just can't imagine how much of a nightmare it would have been for them to just organize that event. Because, like, I was with the media, like back in the day in TKO, and like we had our own spot, and it was really good. We were above everybody, so we had a really good view on the fights and stuff. But like, I don't know, was it at the BTC training center when you fought there?
No, I fought.
So,
and I got a school bus full of my fans. I sold over 100 tickets. Like it was good. Like they gave me a title shot main event at 3-3. I mean, they definitely made me feel like I was on cloud nine. But it's just one of those things with COVID. The license for Ontario is just like, I mean, I literally had to get blood work and stuff. It makes me feel like I'm an amateur. Like, I had to do a bunch of COVID tests to get to the States, but like, I love traveling. I'll do whatever I got to do to travel. It's so much of a hassle just to fight in your backyard.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because like I was, so you didn't fight there, but like at the BTC training center, it's like the dressing rooms for the fighters and stuff, they're upstairs.
Right.
And you go down the stairs and then you walk to the fucking cage. And basically, there was that area upstairs. The journalists, we were just outside of that area on a small, like, second floor.
Right.
But we couldn't, like, go through the door because that was the fighter backstage area and the commission. They didn't want us to interact at all with the fighters because of COVID protocols and stuff. So it was the fights were good and stuff, but, man, like, it was complicated. Just to go to the washroom, it was super complicated, and people, they had to wear masks and, like, all that stuff. I think even the fighters had to wear masks on their way to the cage.
Yeah. Like,
and like there was some people in the crowd and stuff. I was quite surprised to be honest about how many people there were in that gym. And like, of course, when there was a guy from Hamilton, he sold a lot of tickets, and like when he won, people just went fucking crazy, and security, they couldn't really do shit about people in the crowd. So they were really trying to control the other things, being like the interactions between the fighters and the crowd, or the fighters and the journalists. And so it was just like really tough to navigate through that event. Like, I couldn't really go out and do a post-fight interview or stuff like that. So, man, yeah, it was cool to see live fights, but in another way, it was so fucking complicated and stressful, and too many like stuff and restrictions going on for just,
yeah,
like an event with maybe 300 people total in a gym.
Yeah, I feel for them, because, like, to be honest, like, it's people like BTC, like, I was loyal to BTC, because they were, like, I was their champ, right, and just how it all worked out, mainly, like, just throwing a show in Peterborough, like, that was incredible as well. Like, I had so many fans both times I fought for them, just because, like, they were in my back door, basically. But, yeah, it's just, I definitely feel for them, because, like, it's people like them and Jamie Champion with Prospects, like, them kind of like, it's healthy competition, but at least it was like they almost kept each other on their toes, right? Because like, if one promotion was slightly better than the other, you're not going to get all the good fighters like one person. So I don't know, I'm just like I said, I'm just happy Stephen Petrie's out of business. I mean, I like to see the good guys win, and they're definitely good guys. I hate to talk shit about them, like just because I was saying there the one day, it just really didn't, I commented on the one post, like, I noticed Ty Wilson was supposed to fight Louis Jourdain, and, like, I mean, I'm more of a Ty Wilson fan. I fought Louis, it was my very first amateur fight, but, like, there's still a bit of bad blood there. I respect him, though, he's definitely a really good fighter, but, like, I was really looking forward to that rematch. I wanted to see Ty win it, but I guess he backed out, like, right before. But I just – they hyped up that fight. And then I just don't know how – like, this tournament's for 10K. Like, 10K is a lot of money in the – like, it almost feels like that Never Back Down movie where they're fighting for, like, money or something. Like, that's finally actually, like, substantial money. I mean, I think that's amazing. I just think they could have had, like, a couple more of those guys. I could think of a bunch of ones. Like, they had Sirius City and Mateo. Like, to me, you get those two guys, Louis and Ty Wilson, that's worth 10 grand to me. I mean, none of those guys, I think, have more than two fights. The Teshi guys told me so. I don't know. Like, good for them. Like, I'm hyped about the 10 grand. I wish they'd do that for 125. That'd be cool.
Yeah, but to be honest, the tournament, it's good. Like, the fighters that they picked, yes, they're inexperienced, but, like, they're good fighters.
Yeah.
I feel like it's gonna, the caliber is going to be good. But, yeah, of course, it's not a tournament with, like, the top bantamweights in Canada and stuff. But, man, I think they're difficult to find. I don't know in Ontario, but in Quebec, basically right now in Quebec, you have to be vaccinated to fight.
Right, right.
If you're not vaccinated, you can't fight. And let me tell you that there may be 10 to 12 vaccinated fighters right now in Quebec.
I'm in the middle. I'm not quite on each side, so I'll just say less and keep myself innocent.
No, of course, but like there's a lot of fighters that, man, I follow them on social media and stuff. They're not the type of people that they're going to be convinced like to be vaccinated, basically. Mm. It's not going to happen for many of these guys.
I just don't like being told what to do.
Yeah, no, that's the same for me. Like honestly, I did it. I got my two doses and like I was super willing to do it, like, because man, I see my mom often and she's going on 60, and my grandfather, he's got Alzheimer's, and like I want to kill these people. So I was okay with getting the vaccine, but now that I see how it's like almost being weaponized, that oh, you're vaccinated and you're not, so you're I fucking hate that shit. And yeah, I feel like that wasn't part of the deal. If I knew that was part of the deal, maybe I would have had second thoughts, to be quite honest. I don't like the way that it's going, really.
I'm somewhere in the middle on everything. Like, to be honest, I just couldn't afford no sore arm in the last couple weeks of my camp. So
I trained just after. It was horrible, man. It was like the worst decision.
Don't get me wrong, I'm still not for it either. Like you said, like, I'm in a position where, like, I don't know. I just don't like, I want to see how many people reach out and are kind of like you, like, oh man, I wasn't completely. I want to see kind of who was like, oh man, you're really a piece of shit, or, you know, I want to see the true colors come out on a few people. Because I mean, just having fought last week, I like. Like, I'm really, like, obviously everybody's can be agitated on a diet for 6 weeks and this and that. And like, but, like, there's a certain – I said a few things to people, like, leading up to the fight where I'm, like you know, I'm a dickhead. but at the same sense, I mean, they all know the game, and they know how much stress is really – but even with COVID, that's – I feel the same, like – Once you put the stress on someone, you kind of see their true colors too, right? So,
No, it's crazy, man.
People out there that don't want to stay in their own lane, right?
Yeah, and it's crazy how, like, I know people like on both sides that are like super dedicated to, and they almost like lost themselves in that, because I don't hear them talk about anything else ever.
Yeah.
Being the super conspiracy guy, crazy, anti-vax, anti-this, anti-that, or the super pro-vax, never let go on the measures because it's so dangerous and we're all gonna die. Like,
yeah.
Both these groups, they don't talk about anything else. They don't do anything else. They spend their days arguing with the other side on social media. It's like, man, like, I got my opinions on COVID. I got my opinions on basically everything that exists, but that's never like gonna stop me to live and to do other things and to be friends with people that don't think like I think.
Yeah, and seeing the two extremes, like you said, just see, like, to me anyway, like seeing those two extremes, I feel like people like me and you, kind of in the middle, like you're vaxxed, I'm not vaxxed, like people that are in the middle, like that are knowledgeable, that like, hey, like, yeah, like Joe Rogan always said, like, if you spend your time hating on somebody else, it literally, like, rapes you of your own, you know, like, then you just spend your time hating, right? But I feel like it definitely makes people more in the middle, like, are really, like, it's usually, like, a dormant state, like, because you're not out there, like, telling everybody, but, like, you see more and more people that are in the middle that are starting to speak up about it, right? Because it's just, like, I don't know, so I'm a fighter at heart, right? So, like, I grew up on the side of where people piss me off and, like, I'm going to check you. Like, I never really got bullied that much, but, like, a lot of people did try to bully me just being short and stuff. But, like, I would always bully the bully. Like, if I see some kid picking on somebody, I didn't agree with it. Like, maybe in nearsight it was wrong, but, like, I've always, like, I'm not shy. I'll stay in the middle until I feel like maybe I can do a little good with my fist.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like, In the end, we're here to talk MMA, to watch some fucking fights. Who really cares about what you think about vaccines and COVID? And like, yeah, I know some people, they feel the need to speak out about it. But like, man, who gives a fuck in the end? Like, you're going to get into the cage with another guy and you're going to fight him and you're going to try to win, to choke him out, to KO him. And that's what we like. That's why we're here. That we like the sport. We don't don't fucking care about what fighters think about like that president or that vaccine or that social thing. That who fucking cares in the end?
Yeah, exactly, man.
Yeah, so man, I'm gonna let you go, but before I let you go, I leave you with the final word, man. Anybody you want to shout out, any final thing you want to say, the floor is yours, man.
Yeah, man, just like huge thanks to all my sponsors. They it didn't cost me anything to just do this stream. I actually got to keep my purse for like one of the first times, so it's nice to just finally see and the hard work pay off a little bit. And just every fight, it seems like more and more people jump on board and believe in me. And I mean, it doesn't happen without guys like that. So especially like Justin Bruckman coming all that way, Joe Elliott started with the guy, he's still in my corner, always will be, always Big Country proud. So yeah, man, Gordon McPhail, that's another thing. Like, my game just totally changed when I started having a strength and conditioning coach right after the Dave Henry fight is actually when I met him. So huge help to my game. And Rampant Chef cooking my meals. I've already gained 30 pounds in a week, so I'm gonna have to get back on that and zero down for December 18th, man. Thank you, man. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate you always getting me out there.
No, for sure. It's my pleasure, man, because like I told you before, first time I saw you at TKO, man, even though you didn't win all these fights, I was like, this guy is fucking crazy, and he's a grappler, and I'm a grappler, and I love me some grappling, and I want to see that guy just be like the craziest, wildest grappler out there. And you're still that, but you see that technique levels going up, you're way more controlled, way more able to control these guys, dominate them, and still be super exciting in the process. So that's my type of guy, and all the success that you're having right now, man, it is well deserved, to be honest. We're all really proud of you. We're gonna keep following, and I'm really happy to have you on the podcast anytime you want, man.
Means a lot, brother. I can't wait to roll you too. So I'll get down to Montreal or something. I'll catch you soon.
Yeah, for sure. Message me anytime you're out here and we'll do it, man.
Definitely, man. I'll give you some heads up for sure.
Cool, man. Have a nice day. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, brother.